Hello, and welcome to the official podcast for the confirmation class of Grace Lutheran Church. God unfold and promise to renew the whole creation. We've been working our way through Manna and Mercy, and we're on up to chapter 2 now, after last time discussing chapter 1. And chapter 2 takes quite a leap in the biblical story. Chapter 1, we were looking at the creation story itself, the very beginning of Genesis, and now we find ourselves in Exodus. And we kind of skipped over a whole bunch of things to get to Exodus. And I think for the most part, that is going to be just fine, but there are a couple of things I just wanted to sort of highlight as we read Manna and Mercy chapter 2 this coming week. The first thing is Abraham. So after things don't go well with creation, and then you have Noah's flood, and then you have the people essentially trying to build the Tower of Babylon, God decides we need to do things differently. And so God begins to work with Abram, who will later become Abraham. And that is essentially how it is the descendants of Abraham that become sort of God's chosen people. They were chosen not because Abraham was somehow better than everybody else, but because Abraham basically heard the summons and went. So he leaves his homeland and then he goes wandering. There are a couple of generations that follow Abraham, but we eventually come to a descendant of Abraham's, a direct descendant of Abraham's called Joseph. You might remember Joseph in the coat of multicolors, probably actually better translated as long sleeves as opposed to multicolors. But the story of Joseph ends the book of Genesis and leaves the people in Egypt. And the important thing to know about Joseph is that Joseph is sort of not the kind of righteous, idyllic character that we oftentimes, I think, kind of portrayed Joseph as. I mean, he is the one who gets sold into slavery by his older brothers. He is sort of the good son, the favored son, and so he must also then be the good son. But if we actually read the biblical story of Joseph, Joseph comes across in a much more ambiguous light. He's kind of a whiner. He's definitely a tattletale. And then I think there is a way, a very real way, of reading the story of Joseph and seeing within that story and in Joseph's actions the responsibility that eventually leads to slavery for all of Abraham's descendants and the slaves of Egypt. And that really comes, and we begin to see how it is that Joseph is responsible for all that slavery in the 47th chapter of Genesis. And I'm going to read that story, and it beginning with verse 13. So I'm reading Genesis 47, verse 13. Feel free to pause it here if you'd like to sort of follow along and look it up. And basically here we'll see Joseph kind of centralizing power in Egypt. By this time in the Joseph story, Joseph has worked his way out of slavery. He has sort of interpreted dreams for Pharaoh and become one of Pharaoh's top advisors. And one of the things that he has mentioned is that there is a famine coming. So then in verse 13, it gets here. There was no food in the land because the famine was so severe. The land of Egypt, the land of Canaan, dried up from the famine. Joseph collected all of the silver to be found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the grain, which people came to buy, and he deposited it in Pharaoh's treasury. So he's charging the people for the grain. The silver from the land of Egypt and from the land of Canaan had been spent. I mean, he's charged them so much that nobody has anything left. And all of the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, "Give us food. Why should we die before your eyes just because the silver is gone?" This becomes, I think, one of those sort of important questions that kind of will continue to haunt us throughout sort of the rest of Manna and Mercy and the Bible. And really, in some extent, a continuous question that I think we will continue to ask of God as well. Joseph said, "Give me your livestock, and I will give you food for your livestock if the silver is gone." So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them food for the horses, flocks, cattle, and donkeys. He got them through that year with food in exchange for all of their livestock. When the year was over, they came to him the next year and said to him, "We can't hide from my master that the silver is spent and that we've given the livestock to my master. All that's left for my master is our corpses and our farmland. Why should we die before your eyes, we and our farmland too? But us and our farms for food, and we our farms will be under Pharaoh's control. Give us seed so that we can stay alive and not die, and so that our farmland won't become unproductive." Joseph brought all of Egypt's farmland from Pharaoh because every Egyptian sold his field when the famine worsened. So land became Pharaoh's. He moved the people to the cities from one end of Egypt to the other. However, he didn't buy the farmland of the priests because Pharaoh allowed the priests a subsidy, and they were able to eat from the subsidy Pharaoh gave them. Therefore, they did not have to sell their farmland. Joseph said to the people, "Since I've now purchased you and your farmland for Pharaoh, here's your seed. Plant the seed on the land. When the crop comes in, you must give one-fifth to Pharaoh. You may keep four-fifths for yourself for planting fields and for feeding yourselves, those in your household and in your children." People said, "You've saved our lives. If you wish, we will be Pharaoh's slaves." So Joseph made a law that still exists today. Pharaoh receives one-fifth from Egypt's farmland. Only the priest's farmland didn't become Pharaoh's. Joseph, as the Pharaoh's advisor, was able to essentially use the famine to consolidate, to bring all of Egypt under Pharaoh's control, except for the land and money that the priest owned, because they were sort of the helpers of Pharaoh. And we kind of see that if you look on page 4 in Man and Mercy, you'll see that in the diagram of the pyramid. But essentially, here we have Pharaoh taking advantage of a natural disaster, and Joseph right along with Pharaoh, the sort of the mastermind behind it, of a natural disaster to pocket at the expense of the people. I know last time we talked a little bit about oppression, and here we see how oppression begins to work. Now, once you have all of the people sort of subjugated and no viable way to kind of support themselves, it now becomes a chore to sort of justify that system. And it is from this place that we begin to see some of the things like racism develop, gender discrimination, those things that kind of keep human beings separate. It's not because they were that different from us in the beginning, at least from a conceptual standpoint, but because of the practices, the idea of becoming sort of the big deal and wanting to remain as a big deal and establishing practices as Joseph did to make that happen, now it becomes, for that next generation and subsequent generations, a product of trying to sort of maintain that sense of oppression. And this is where things like racism, sexism, gender discrimination, age discrimination, all of these kind of things begin to come in to sort of justify the maintenance of that status quo. And it is that status quo that will be most severely challenged in the story of Exodus, as God understands that this is not the way that the world was intended to work, and begins once again, because in many ways, Exodus is sort of a new creation story. If last week was sort of the beginning of the creation stories, this is a new one. This is a new creation story that leads to sort of a new way of thinking, a new way of sort of being, seeing, and worshiping in the world. And we'll learn more about that as we get into the second chapter of Man and Mercy. Until next time.